Introducing the all-new 2023 Ford Bronco Sport, now available at Jim K. Ford. With its rugged design and off-road capabilities, this SUV is built for adventure. Whether you're heading off the beaten path or just cruising around town, the Bronco Sport delivers performance, comfort, and style. With four-wheel drive, terrain management system, and advanced safety technology, you can take on any road with confidence. Adventure awaits at 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans or jimkford.com.
At Jim K. Ford Lincoln, we say yes!
The Steve Warren Project. Sports and whatever.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back once again with another episode of the SWP, the Steve Warren Project, Sports and Whatever podcast, whatever you want to use the acronym, however you want to do it, it's fine with us. We just don't care. But we're glad you're here. That part we do care about. Glad you're here listening, supporting the program. It is Steve Warren along with Jim Jerome. I'm in Ottawa. He is in Edmonton. We got lots going on. Man, late September is so good for sports fans right now. But James, let me ask you this question. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm very good, Stevie.
Excellent.
Very good. Yeah. Loud and proud.
Yeah, as always.
I got a question for you, Stevie.
Okay.
There is lots going on. The Ryder Cup. I stayed up all night. I stayed up till 6 in the morning watching the Ryder Cup. And then the Blue Jays.
Yes.
Okay, I think if they got two games left, I think if they win tonight, they're in.
Magic number one as of Saturday, September 30th.
So magic number one. If they lose and Seattle loses, are they in?
Any combination of Seattle losses and Blue Jay wins equaling one, and they're in, the Jays.
Okay, what if Seattle loses and Jays lose?
Then no clinch today.
No clinch. It'll have to be tomorrow.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so I'm watching that. It's fantastic. But Stevie,
you know
all the... Like, there's been a bunch of bad calls in the strike zone, okay, from the umps. Mm-hmm. And so there's been all this talk, about, well, they got to get the automated whatever, okay? Why don't they just agree? Because when you're watching a baseball game, they put the strike zone up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Superimposed strike zone. Everyone knows what that is, right?
And yep.
And it's fairly accurate, right? Why don't they just have someone looking at that, and then the umpire has an earpiece, and they go, it's a ball.
Yeah. I don't want to take all the humanity out of it, but it's getting to that stage where you could probably start challenging these things a little bit. As long as it doesn't slow down the game, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Immediately when we see it, there's a guy in the booth going strike.
Yeah.
But, and the ump just relays that in a split second.
Right. What I have a big problem with this week is, I don't know if you saw this replay, but it was Bryce Harper. He's absolutely certain that he's had a check swing.
Right.
And he's taking his shin pad off, and he's about to trot down to first. And Angel Hernandez, or Angel Hernandez, mm-hmm. whatever you want to pronounce, he's the third base umpire. This guy's entire career, every time you hear about him, it's because he's done something boneheaded, made a bad call. And he's usually smug and aggressive after the bad call. And for some reason, this guy maintains his job. This was obviously a check swing by Bryce Harper. They showed the replay, and the announcers were almost they're almost weeping, going, oh, my God, what? But Hernandez is down there, lighting up Bryce Harper. You're out of the game, and Harper was livid, obviously. I just don't understand how that guy can continue to umpire Major League Baseball. He's probably got scores of YouTube videos of his incompetence, and mm-hmm. yet he still persists. He must have incriminating photos of some big deal, big shot at the at Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I saw that too. I saw that, and
brutal.
Bryce is kind of you love to hate him a little bit, over the years, right?
No doubt, no doubt.
But the guy had a point. The guy had a point.
I'd say so.
Okay? It's like, yeah, but I didn't. Again, Stevie, right? Just, can you review that stuff? I think you're probably right. You can't break up, a pitcher, with a batter in the box and break up the count, and go, okay, hang on. Okay. It's 2-2.
Yeah.
But hang on. We got to see if he's, I agree. Right. That'd be nuts. If you say, okay, we got to go to the booth to see if he actually went around.
Yeah. I think it takes a little of the romance out of baseball as well. And one thing I know about review or challenges, it's still making everybody as frustrated as it ever did. So I don't know. I'm of two minds of it. I want to get the call right and everything, but I'm cognizant of I don't want all the time spent looking at things again and again, and you lose a bit of the spontaneity and the romance of the game. Where it's now, officiated maybe old
the umpires make a good point. Go, okay, we get that you see this at home. It's their worst nightmare, right? Mm-hmm. It's the umpire's worst nightmare that they put up that strike zone. You know, I can't imagine these guys like this thing, right? That, you know, but does baseball use it as missed calls? You know, do they regroup with the umpires going, look at dude, you missed two here, you know, blatantly,
right?
The ball's way outside the strike zone, but maybe the umpires go, yeah, the strike zone you're seeing at home though is not the strike zone we use.
Right.
Right. Could be an argument for the umpires going, so leave us alone, you know? But anyway,
I would say this, that it makes them look bad. You're quite right to have all this technology because in hindsight that you see more frequently how often they're wrong. I've always said I'd be interested in let's say the NHL, for example, let's do it as an experiment for an entire season. Now, instant replay's been around forever. I get that. But I would argue you would probably have a better viewing experience if you weren't getting instant replay on controversial calls, because you get to see it now as the viewer and you say, oh my God, how did he miss that? And you get angry about things. If you watch the game without instant replay, which officials generally do, I think you would watch it with a lot less frustration. You would suspect maybe some penalty had occurred there, but by not getting the instant replay, you'd go, okay, I'll defer to the referee on that one. You can't defer to the referee when you have a better view on things from your HDTV on your couch than he does. It would be an interesting argument to see if they did a whole season without any instant replay. I'm not talking coach's challenge. I'm talking about the general instant replays, with the exception of maybe seeing a nice goal being scored. Just bury that stuff, and I bet you'd enjoy the experience more.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the reviewed calls in hockey, for example, is the offside.
Hate it.
But you know, if it results in a goal, right? That's when they call for but that's when they call for the review, right?
Right.
The team who gets scored against goes, okay, I think he was offside. If it's blatant, but can they still review, you know, or is it like now they got to stop the game and go to that thing? I kind of agree with you. I'm like, okay, they maybe missed it, but they missed it by an inch.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys shouldn't have let them score anyway.
Right.
Okay. So it's not these 10 feet inside the blue line, you know, before he
gets the linesman never missed the blatant. The ones that are blatant that truly gave a team an advantage that led to them having the advantage and being able to score a goal as a result of that advantage, those are never missed ever.
Right. Right.
Right. So it's the ones where they're just, to me, you know, you're praying so much for scoring in the NHL and you're pulling goals off the board over ticky tack, 1 millimeter, slow it down to 1/1000th of a frame or whatever it is. Why are you doing that? The whole offside rule, I'm going on a rant, has been brought in like 100 years ago because guys were net hanging beside the goalie while the play was down at the other end. That's what offside is designed to prevent. It's not about wiping goals off the board because a guy was a millimeter offside.
Right. No cherry picking, man. No cherry picking. Exactly. Remember the street games? No cherry picking.
That said, I think it would be interesting to see a season where they bury the offsides and have guys just actually standing at the far end beside the goalie, just ice the puck, and all of a sudden I got about 15 scoring chances. That might be kind of fun. Anyway. Right.
Well, they could do it in 3-on-3. You know? Get rid of the offside, but
I see what you mean, yes.
Yeah. The only sport where I think they need the review, in my mind, maybe two of them, but it's a good idea for football, right? It's a really good idea for football if they catch the pass, you know, on the boundary line, right? In the NFL, both feet got to go in. The CFL just won, I think. Yeah. And so I like that idea, right? I like that idea going, no, the dude was out of bounds, okay? So he didn't get both feet in.
Well, and football's so full of stoppages to start with. You got time to look at stuff.
Yeah, true. The one I don't like is if they're looking at interference, okay? If they're looking at pass interference, which you can review, I think, in the NFL. If you look at it, I think the referee should have the option to say, yes, he interfered with them, but the ball was nowhere near catchable. You know, and as it stands now, that's not an option. You know, it's like, well, the guy stopped him, but the fucking ball was 10 yards over his head.
Well, I do think they can wipe off interference for that reason.
They can?
Yep. Like if I throw you the ball and you're interfered with, but I threw it 80 yards past you, they'll often say, hey, I mean, if it's a holding call, that's different. But if it's truly an interference, they can wipe it off saying it was not a catchable ball.
Okay. Or holding then, you know, it's like, here's this guy holding the guy 15 yards off the line of scrimmage downfield.
Right.
And so that's a penalty. Well, they didn't throw the ball to him.
Right. You know?
But you say, well, the reason I didn't throw the ball to him is because the dude interfered him. He couldn't complete his play, you know,
his route,
his pattern. He couldn't, his route. Yeah, he couldn't. So anyway,
speaking of football,
baseball, anyway, they should try that.
All right. We've figured out the whole, coach's challenge. Go. Yes.
Go Jays. Go.
Yeah. Got the Jays as well. And, here in town, we got the Senators halfway through their preseason, and it's like a weekly news conference of something new happening in their front office. Last week, it was Michael Andlauer officially taking over as the owner of the Ottawa Senators. We saw that coming a mile away. Same story for Steve Staios yesterday morning. It was he basically officially stepped down from the Oilers. He had some sort of player development role there and rejoins his old crony, Michael Andlauer, in Ottawa. So Staios is going to be the new president of president of hockey operations, overseeing all the hockey stuff. So he is Pierre Dorion's brand new boss and should be interesting. He had a good gig in Edmonton that he liked, but probably would not have taken that job because Andlauer and Staios were together with the Hamilton Bulldogs. And at that stage, being an NHL owner, that wasn't even on Andlauer's radar. And so Staios said, well, I want to get back to the NHL here and start that career anew. And it's a year later, this is only 11 months ago, the Sens went up for sale, and all of a sudden, Andlauer and Staios find themselves back together, this time in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, we did a Suspendables a couple days ago, and we interviewed Cyril Leader.
Did you now?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we had a nice half hour with Cyril.
Cool.
Well, I've always liked Cyril. I was saying, you know, back in the day, Stevie, during the show, you know, it was such a cool dynamic that we had with the Sens. You know, we were the broadcaster. The radio station was the broadcaster. So we ended up doing a ton with the team, right? From parking lot broadcast to parties to in a box to hosting stuff.
Yeah.
And it was cool. It was cool. But one of the cool guys about it was Cyril Leader.
Sure.
You know, we used to run into him all over the joint. He was a great guy. And as everyone knows now in Ottawa, he's back. You know, he's back as the CEO and president. And everyone's sort of breathing this sigh of relief saying, and you pointed it out last time going, oh my God, this owner's sane and mature and cool. Yeah. So... anyway, Cyril was obviously pumped, you know, pumped about moving ahead, and the Sens got new life there, man, with that, right? You wonder certainly from the business side, I wonder if it creates more season's tickets.
Oh,
with the new owner.
It will.
According to what everyone used to freak out about with Melnick, it should.
Well, I talked to lots of guys. I know lots of guys who were season ticket holders, some of them suite holders, and they stopped doing it. They said, I mean, I love this team. I want to support all these young guys. I love the NHL and the fact that it's here in our town, but I can't put money in that guy's pocket. I just can't. Mm-hmm. And now things improved over the last couple of years, even in Eugene Melnick's final months, but this has taken it to a whole other level, right at a time when the team is supposed to be really, really good young team. They've added some nice pieces. And now they're they're doing all the right things. One thing since Andlauer was announced last week, I had a conversation with a gentleman who has worked with Michael Andlauer in the past. And like everybody else in this town, he had nothing but good things to say about Andlauer, but he did have this one caveat, was something along the lines of, man, he's a really good guy, family man. He'll treat you with respect. It's good. But do not, based on what he's seen, he's like, it's all been sugary. It's all been flowery. But do not do this. Don't think of him as a soft touch. He is certainly not that. Everything's positive right now. But someday, they may hit tough times. And and that's when, because in the early days with Eugene Melnick, I don't mean to make any comparisons, everything was positive. Eugene Melnick, he brought us all to an Eagles concert, if you'll recall, back then.
Right.
Yep. You guys gave me a hard time for bringing Claudia when my wife couldn't make it.
Right.
So things could change, but right now everything is great. And Michael Andlauer seems like the perfect owner for this organization.
Yeah. And I guess what you got to do, because everyone's so critical, right, of, you know, especially a fan base, right? They you know, don't lose a hockey game. Okay. You're going to get drilled.
Right.
Well, we're going to lose some games, you know. It's like, and so real, everyone's, you know, beyond outspoken, right? If I'm Andlauer, though, I'm actually glad to hear that, right? If I'm an owner, I think they got to get up over 10,000 seasons tickets, okay, is their goal all the time. Which
I think they are. I think they are now.
Yeah, they're getting there. If the season's ticket holders or walk up crowd doesn't increase, I may be like Andlauer if he's saying what you're saying is to come out and go, okay, listen, you guys, you're getting nowhere with me unless you buy tickets, you know?
Right.
Unless you buy tickets and come to the game. And I'm not trying to sell you a box for 40 grand, you know, but I need to fill seats, right? So, you know, that's what you got to do, man. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as an owner, he's flooring it right now. Like, you look at different times in this organization's history, it's been about, can they make payroll? Attendance is down. They're losing. There's been good times, but there've been those types of times as well. Right now, even though Andlauer is only in his first week, he and his ownership group are flooring it. They are so at the salary cap, they can't afford to sign one of their top young centers in Shane Pinto. They're going to have to trade someone away just to get under the cap. That's new ground for the Senators. Mm-hmm. And they just spent, as a group, $950 million U.S., James. Mm-hmm. This is an organization that was purchased for $50 million as an expansion fee in 92. And when Eugene Melnick took them over 20 years ago, he only had to pay $130 million. And Melnick, even under those circumstances, was complaining all the time about how the fans were sort of doing their part and showing up. And there were all kinds of financial. That was at $130 million. This is at $950 million, and they're spending right to the cap. So they're doing their part for sure, and it sounds like in the early days the fans are, but that can we've seen it before that if things go sideways, everything could change.
Yeah, you know, and I'd asked you, you know, I said, talking to Russ this year, I said, you know, you paid $1 billion, just shy of $1 billion. Like, how are they going to make money? You know, and Cyril spent about 5 or 10 minutes explaining exactly how a team makes money. And it was totally interesting, you know? Mm-hmm. And then he said, well, but they're not doing it to make money. I said, what? He said, well, obviously they can't, you know, they can't make $950 million back because they don't do it for the money. These guys are into it, you know. They're into it. They want to win. It was Andlauer, you know, came out and said, it was just a dream of mine to win a Stanley Cup, you know.
What an expensive dream.
Yeah, for sure. But there's some merit to that, you know. Right, about just a love for the game and being a Canadian guy, and you know, he owned that. But by the way, the guy owns, I don't know, two or three other hockey teams, right?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah, he owns the Hamilton Bulldogs in the OHL, which has now become the Brantford Bulldogs. I don't know if he's going to do that long term or not, but yeah, it is interesting because, I mean, there are organizations like NFL teams. I have to assume they make money with the gaudy amount they'll get for their TV contracts. The NHL is not there yet, But I think most NHL owners with these $85 million payrolls, whatever they are right now, they're basically in a, if they're generally happy if they can somewhere break even, and it is kind of a billionaire's toy when you get down to it. Right. We'll take a time out of the program. When we come back, we'll get we'll talk a little Connor Bedard and maybe a little more Ryder Cup. That's after these words.
Introducing the future of driving with Ford electric vehicles, now available at Jim K. Ford. Say goodbye to gas stations and hello to efficiency with electric power that delivers a smooth and silent ride. With advanced technology and smart features, you'll experience a whole new level of convenience and connectivity. And with Ford's commitment to sustainability, you'll also be doing your part for the planet. So come on down to Jim K. Ford today and test drive the future with Ford EVs, or visit us online at jimkford.com.
At Jim K. Ford Lincoln, we say yes!
If you are looking to buy or sell your home, the Glenn Walton Real Estate Team can help you. Glenn helped me sell a home a couple of years ago and did a ton for us, including staging. He provided a great painter, Yavor, a cleaner, even bought new ceiling lights for us, all to make sure the home is looking its best on picture day, all part of his services, and he can do the same for you. Visit glennwalton.com. Have you had a look at Connor Bedard yet, James?
You know what? I missed it last night. I was falling asleep, stayed up all night watching the Ryder Cup, and I always flip through my phone. Mm-hmm. And then I saw it, but I forget, Steve. So I'll read a headline, right? It's like, watch Connor Bedard undress these guys here in the last game that Chicago played.
Yeah.
I go, oh man, I got to look at that. I wonder if there's a recipe for chicken. And
you're very distracted.
And then I drive myself nuts, Steve. You know what you ever do? They go, no, what was it? What was this I going to look at? What was it? So, no, I haven't seen it.
Yeah. No, it's easy to get distracted, go down the rabbit hole and all that, for sure. You know, he looked very good in his first preseason game as an NHL player. He didn't sound that happy about it. Bedard had two assists as Chicago beat St. Louis 2-1 in overtime. Bedard said, I feel pretty good, comfortable and stuff, but I think I could do a lot better. I don't know if there was a surprise. Obviously, less room, but nothing I didn't expect. So just kind of get used to it here. Like, he's right there with the early days of Connor McDavid as far as just really bland commentary to the media. But he sure is going to be a lot of fun to watch. Just, seeing some of the highlights, the way that guy's able to operate in space with a puck and create that space for himself. And just these little head fakes that just, you know, guys almost falling over sideways. And the release, of course, going to be a special player. The question is, how many points can this guy get in his very first season in the NHL? So I looked it up. Team Mussolini had something like 130-something points as a rookie in the NHL. Next was Peter Stastny at 109. I honestly think that he has a chance to slide into number two. I think Team was out of his league, probably, just different times. It's harder game now than when Team Mussolini was setting that record. But I think that he can catch Peter Stastny's number two spot at 109. That is how highly I think of Connor Bedard.
Yeah, I did that gig a few weeks ago just outside of town here in a place called White Court, the Hot Stove. Mm-hmm. And the guy was super funny. Now I'm forgetting his name, but he saw Bedard play in Vancouver for a 1 week or 2 week pre-training camp. Mm-hmm. And he was on the ice with the likes of Nugent Hopkins and a bunch of other guys.
Was it Luke Gostick?
No, not Luke. Luke was on that panel. So was Louis DeBrus. So was Craig McTavish. Steve McIntyre. Hilarious dude. Absolutely hilarious dude.
Okay. Was it Darcy Hordichuk?
Darcy Hordichuk.
Yep. It's all in there, James. It's just a matter of accessing the file.
Yep. So Darcy Hordichuk said the guy's unreal. He said there's no doubt he'll win Rookie of the Year. But he didn't go that high on points, but he said, I guarantee he's going to get 70 points.
Oh, God, he'll get more than that.
Okay, there we go. Okay.
109, James. I'm calling him at 109.
That would be good.
I'd say. Yeah. And he just plays the game in such a way that's not only highly skilled, it's different. And so much fun to watch. And that was why when Aaron Rodgers went down with the Jets, I was disappointed just from the perspective of that's a great story. And that's that guy made the New York Jets must-see TV, and we got to see him for four snaps. So, stars obviously sell. You're looking at your phone. What's going on here?
I'm not. I'm looking at my notes here to talk about the Ryder Cup thing.
Oh, okay. Very good.
I don't look at my phone.
You know, it looked like the thumbs were going crazy. Anyway, that's all right. What did you think of Saturday when Rory McIlroy goes bonkers on Patrick Cantlay's caddy, Joe LaCava? I guess it was. So I guess the backstory was Cantlay hits a big putt, which means at the very least, the Americans are going to tie, I guess. And but still, Rory McIlroy, if he makes a putt, can kind of have the match.
Right.
And
right.
He misses it. But right before the putt, I guess, because Cantlay had been absorbing the European crowd, waving their hats and stuff and all that, I guess, you know, at some point, the Americans started taking exception to that. When good things happened for them, they started waving their ball caps. And so after Cantlay makes a bomb on 18, looks like they're going to win the match, LaCava, who's Cantley's caddy, starts waving his hat, kind of standing close to the line of Rory McIlroy, who has a chance again to have the match. And that's when he had some issues, and it ended up with Rory in the parking lot after screaming in LaCava's direction about getting his shit together. And what did you think of all that?
Yeah. What, Patrick Cantlay doesn't wear a hat in the Ryder Cup, and Patrick Cantlay's a different guy. He's not the most likable guy out there, but he's good. And people are hitting him with because he maybe at some point said, it's not fair that we don't get paid to do the Ryder Cup. Mm-hmm. The American team's like, would you shut up? We do this for the country and yada, yada, yada. So he hasn't worn a hat. And when they talked to him about it, he said, the reason I'm not wearing a hat is because it doesn't fit.
Right.
And then they went back to the last Ryder Cup, and he didn't wear a hat either. So what happens is, which is kind of fun, is the European fans start to wave their hat every time the Cantlay comes by. Okay.
Right.
And taking it off. So, Cantlay makes this 43-foot putt after being one down with three to go. Okay. And wins the match, but he jugs the 43-footer and Rory can still tie, as you pointed out. So once he makes the place just erupts, you know, the American guys erupt and they start to wave their hats, which is fine. But Rory gets over to the ball and he has to ask Joe LaCava to move. He's in his line of sight. Mm-hmm. He's waving his own hat. And then apparently he doesn't get out of his line of sight. And so Rory's freaking out after. Shane Lowry was the one who said before Rory putted, Shane Lowry told LaCava, get the fuck out of the way.
Right.
And then LaCava snapped back at him. Okay. So that was the play. And then Rory loses and freaks out in the parking lot, mm-hmm. saying it's a disgrace, you know?
Right.
So a few things there. Rory's wrong. Okay. Rory's wrong to do that shit in the parking lot. Right. If you start to do that, you're going to start to pick apart. We don't always hear it. See, there's all sorts of shit that is said. When players walk by the crowds, you know, they showed Tyrrell Hatton yesterday calling a guy a dickhead, you know, his actual words. So it's kind of juicy. You know, the Americans are getting absolutely pummeled. They're getting pummeled. Okay. Brooks Koepka and his partner yesterday lost on the 11th hole.
Ooh.
They lost 9-7.
That's a beat down.
That's the biggest beatdown ever, okay, to Hovland. And they were 7 over mm-hmm. in the – it's like an alternate shot, that format, okay? They just got fucking drilled. Zach Johnson has made so many mistakes in my mind, picking players. I predicted this. I didn't – you know, I said Europe's going to beat them. They're way more cohesive, the team. They got a bunch of fractured shit on the American team. They don't like each other. Koepka coming in, not good. Guys don't like Patrick Cantlay. Justin Thomas is not going to play very well. He hasn't been. Jordan's trying to get his game together. You know, not great, yada, yada. Justin Thomas and Jordan get drilled. Okay. I think the best they've done is half a point. But there's
by the way, before you move on from that, did you see where Zach Johnson basically pulled the club out of Jordan Spieth's hand at the tee? Because he needed, it was a drivable par four. And right. He basically needed a two. And so Spieth is up there with the driver. I mean, he still could have won if he got a birdie, I think, and that might have been 17 or something. So it wasn't an automatic, but Spieth had the driver ready to go, figuring he needed a two on that par four to get back in the match, because I think he was down by three. And Zach Johnson came up and said, no, you're going to hit the three.
Oh, I didn't.
And he proceeded to hit the three wood into the water. It came up short. So
yeah, they're just playing bad. Just playing bad, you know. And when I looked at it, I'm like, where's Dustin Johnson? Where is Tony Finau? You know, I don't know how Bryson DeChambeau's playing, but he's an unbelievable match player. You know, there are other guys there that I thought should have been on that team, but it just they're just not there, right? Guys are playing shitty. They're hitting way too many bad shots.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, the Europeans are unbelievably on fire. Every time I look, someone's almost making a hole in one. Right. John Rahm's chipped in two or three times. He's the nails. He's absolute fucking nails, you know. But a couple things. LeCava is in the wrong there. Okay. Caddies aren't allowed to do any of that shit. Okay. It's an unwritten rule. Okay. You can't be doing that. They don't do interviews, Steve. That's why you never see interviews with caddies after a guy wins. You know, they avoid social media stuff, I think, and that they just never ever get into any of that. And although, Steve, it's a bunch of emotion, you know. And so I think LeCava was wrong.
I agree 1,000%.
What's that?
I agree 1,000%.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's wrong. Is Rory wrong to do that? You know, part of me is Rory's not very liked either, right? Because of the live, right? He's not backing down from this live thing, and he's getting himself into a corner a little bit because they're going to merge, right? So it's like
he also didn't endure himself very well to the early days of the Ryder Cup when he basically ripped it to shreds. You know, it's another exhibition tournament. You know, I'm not going to drive myself crazy about it. And they actually interviewed him about it, where they made him read his own statement. He's like, "Oh my God, I was a moron back then."
Yeah, right. I saw that.
It's very good.
Right. The event itself is cool. I've never seen so many people on a first tee. Look it up, folks. Like, go to YouTube. The first tee is incredible with the stands and huge amount of people who are showing up for the thing. But in the end, Stevie, right? You know, I find myself, I don't know why, but I've found myself cheering against America. I do. I think there's a bunch of ego in there, you know, with Cantlay and Koepka. So I was kind of like, I hope they lose, you know?
Yeah, I think the European team is way more likable. That Hovland kid with a big smile all the time, big heavy metal fan, Rory McIlroy, I've always been a big fan of him. What the hell is his name? Justin Rose has always been a likable, nice guy. It's just a way more likable side. And so I'm with you. I'm cheering for Europe all day, and I was very pleased to see them just smoke them on Friday.
Yeah. If you look behind the scenes, too, what Luke Donald's done, he's right into the history of the thing, too, right? And they did this. They've sort of devoted this thing to Seve Ballesteros, you know, as one of the best Ryder Cup guys of all time for Europe, you know?
Right.
You know, they pass the flag, Steve, when they sing the anthem at hockey games? You know, they unleash that big... They had one of Seve. Massive, that draped over the whole grandstand. They had a. I watched Luke walk a camera guy through the locker room. What he's done, the quotes he's put up on the wall. He did a really cool thing. The locker room that the Europeans have is there's 14 stalls, or sorry, there's 24 stalls. There's only 12 guys on the team, but he gave all the caddies a locker, you know, beside them and made them part of just all sorts of shit he did that bodes well for. And to his point, you need everyone to get along.
Yeah.
You know, you need everyone to say, drop it. Okay. Leave all that shit at the door and off we go representing Europe in this thing. And I can't help but think that has a lot to do with it.
You know? I like player on player fire. I mean, I think that stuff with Rory and Patrick Reed a few years back where they're going, I can't hear you. I can't, when they're making these putts, just, you know, shot for shot. It was an amazing bit of theater. And then you had Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka, the feud they had. I don't mind player on player. stuff. Mm-hmm. But like you were saying, when the caddy gets involved, that's just dumb. The caddy is there to assist his player. Beyond that, I don't want to hear from him. I don't want to see him. Like I don't want to be disrespectful to anybody because I'm not really about class structure or anything like that. But caddies out there doing, you know, being aggressive to any degree. Right. Like, what is that? It's like a trainer in hockey jumping off onto the ice and starts screaming at somebody. He's like, I have nothing against trainers, but that's just not your place.
Yeah. And the other thing, Steve, is so they finally win a session yesterday, the afternoon session. They win 3-1, right? There's 4 points up for grab, four matches of four rounds. And they come back a little bit. It's 10.5 to 5.5. Okay. And now you have 12 points. It's the singles, you know, starting tonight or in the middle of the night. If I'm the captains. If I'm the captain, I'm gonna pull Joe LaCava aside and go, okay, Joe, explain to me how that benefits us right now when we're getting fucking drilled.
Right.
When we're getting drilled, okay? How is that going to help us now? Okay. So guess what's going to happen now when we go walk to the tee, Joe?
Yeah.
Tomorrow morning, you are going to be a massive distraction. The fucking fans are going to go crazy. They're going to scream and yell and holler and do all sorts of shit. So tons and tons of downside, Joe, no upside.
Yeah.
No upside at all.
No, I think a caddy who opposes who engages in any way competitively with an opposing player.
Right.
I think that's where the ban, like, get out of here. I'm sorry. You can have a conversation all day long with your player. Your player can take up for you on your behalf. But if you're a caddy and you're out there, and at that point, just going back to the situation at 18 today, Rory McIlroy is crouched, lining up his pot. He's crouched down, and you've got LaCava that's 5 feet away from him, still talking to him. And then does the brush away with his hand, like, screw you. Right. And I'm just like, that is not a caddy's place. That, to me, if you engage with an opposing player as a caddy, you're gone. You're just gone. That would be how I'd handle it.
Well, the other thing, Steve, is if, you know, they're pretty twitchy about fans yelling and screaming. You know, they're right. You're allowed to do it to cheer and it's cool, but you're going to get booted out. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to get booted out if you direct something at a player. Okay. It's a little different in golf because there's so much downtime, right? At walking. So I agree with some of that. You know, it's like, hey, Terrell, you douchebag, right? That guy's got to go, right? That guy's got to go. It's too intimate of a setting and stuff like that. So Joe LaCava, so what Joe LaCava did is, fuck, you're out of here, dude. Mm-hmm. We cannot have you as a caddy ripping a guy on the other team, a golfer, to your point, Steve.
Yeah.
Right? That's like, get the fuck out of here. That's a big infraction, man, you know?
Yeah.
So, and in the end, you know, when you look at it, America hasn't won on European grounds in forever, like in a long, long time. You know, Europe seems to beat the shit out of them all the time. You know, in the end, it's a fantastic weekend to watch golf. But, yeah, you're going to drill them. But, you know, on any other day, it might have gone the other way. You know, it might have gone the other way.
True.
But, anyway, Joe LaCava has fucked up a possible comeback for these guys. You know,
yeah, so. It'll be interesting to see on Sunday. Right now, I'm going to go watch my Ottawa Red Blacks in action this afternoon. So I shall take my leave. What are you up to this evening?
I'm doing a life story recording, Steve.
Locally?
With a guy. Yeah. What's that?
Locally?
Locally. Yeah. I'm cool. In the middle of doing one. And I'm doing it with a guy, Steve, who is certifiably fucking crazy. Okay, he's fucking nuts, man. He's nuts.
I hope he doesn't hear this podcast.
He's a friend. What's that?
Hopefully he's not a listener to this podcast. You might lose that client.
Yeah, no, he's just a cool guy. I really like him.
Nice. nice.
He's off his rocker.
Oh, really?
He's off his rocker, but yeah. So I'm just getting settled in for what the 2-3 hours with this guy is going to be.
What he's like, is he telling all kinds of tall tales and things like, oh yeah, when I went down on the Titanic, I rescued 19 people and then I won the World Series. Mosh, eh?
Well, there's that one. And then he's like, okay, we're recording. Steven goes, okay, let's go for a walk with my dog. No, we're sort of in a studio setting here.
Yeah.
No, I'm not moving the microphone. This isn't a walk and talk, you know, it's just. Yeah. Anyways, yeah. He's a loopy guy.
Okay.
So that's what I'm doing the rest of the weekend.
Okay. Steve, well, have fun with all that. Don't forget that our website is stevewproject.com. We certainly appreciate all of you.
That's stevewproject.com.
He's right. Well done.
Did you like the text I sent you about what time we're starting today?
Yes, you got the time changed down today. I turned on the computer today and boom, there he was. I'm like, what kind of parallel universe am I living in right now that Jimmy's on time for a podcast recording?
you would think, okay, the time change is 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the number is 2. There couldn't be more simple math, Steve, than the lowest even number in the world.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not like, oh, don't forget, Jimmy, you're 2 hours, 35 minutes, 4 seconds. Difference.
Yeah. Or I'm in Finland today that we're recording
a
show.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's, and I always fuck it up. I always screw it up.
Yeah.
So
anyway, it's my fault for saying anything about like, you know, it's at 1 o'clock my time. It's like, what does that mean? Your time? Just tell me how it affects me, Steve. That's all I care about.
And I keep screwing it up. Jimmy, can we record Saturday at 1:30 your time? Absolutely, Steve. That's 3:30 your time, 1:30 me. So 1:30 MST. 3:30 EST. That makes it 3:30 for you and 1:30 for me. You go at 3:30. I go at 1:30. 3:30, 1:30.
Clear as mud.
I'm on to something.
You certainly are. You're on to something. Probably some kind of thing you got at Shoppers Drug Mart. Enjoy your weekend, James. We'll talk to you next week.
Good night, everybody.
We'll see you.
Thanks for being with us on the SWP. Please subscribe today or support us on Patreon at stevewproject.com.